Good morning, and I want to apologize. We had a last-minute cancellation, so we do not have a quorum, so we cannot hold a regular Water Commission meeting, so we will be having a workshop. And what that means is that we're not going to be taking notes, and we will go through some of the presentations that were planned. If there's any public comment, we will be taking public comment at the right time, I guess. So we're going to have to sort of walk through this to see how we best do this. So we won't be calling the meeting to order. We will not be taking roll call vote. We will not have a closed session, nor will we have an executive officer's report. And commission member reports, we don't need that. Public testimony. So let's start out with anyone who'd like to make a comment to the commission and to the workshop, really, is what we'll take right now. We would still hold it to a 3-minute time limit if anybody has any comments they'd like to make for the good of the public. Okay, seeing none. Do we want to, Executive Officer Young, do we want to look at the, or go over the water storage investment program now? Or no, we're not going to do that.
Well, we can certainly give you what we have in terms of an update. It's very short. I just want to orient you to where we are.
Good morning, Amy.
It's a red.
There we go.
Morning, Commissioners. Amy Young, Water Commission staff. So on Friday, May 25th, the scores and the technical preliminary scores and technical review will be released and posted on the commission website on the portal. The portal will also include the when you go to the portal, it will take you to a page for each application with the technical review and as well as the agency findings. So that'll be out on Friday, hopefully by the afternoon, early in the afternoon. There will also be applicant meetings scheduled. They will be on June 6th and 7th, and we will be reaching out to the applicants most likely today to set those schedules up. Those meetings will be similar to the last applicant meetings. We will have staff available to answer questions. And then in advance of the June commission meeting, we'll have released the staff recommendations for determinations. And those will be posted on the commission website as well. That's my update. Is there any questions?
Any questions? Any public comment? Okay. Seeing none, thank you. Okay, next on the in the workshop agenda is the briefing on the Division of Safety of Dams regulations. Officer Yun, how do you want to handle that?
I think we can probably invite the folks up to give that presentation.
Okay, great.
You can hear it. It's informational. The DSOD regulations that they'll be discussing are supposed to come back. One set is coming back to you for approval in September. Mm-hmm. So we'll need to think about if we need to bring them back before the September date to address the full commission. But it's information that you can hear.
Great. Welcome. Good morning.
Good morning. As you may recall, in February, I briefed the commission on the dam safety program. I gave you an overview of what we do. And I presented our three rulemaking efforts that we have going on this year, and that's for inundation maps, annual fees, and enhanced enforcement. Today, I will give you an update on the progress of these efforts. The focus today is really going to be on the inundation maps and the annual fees. We are currently going through writing of the enforcement, but it's not yet ready to present to you. As a result of SB 92, the California Dam Safety Program, sorry about this.
That's all right. Don't worry.
Okay. So as a result of SB 92, the California Dam Safety Program has significantly been bolstered through legislation requiring inundation maps and EAPs, that's emergency action plans, modifications to our annual fee schedule, and enhanced enforcement authority. Each of these enhancements requires the development of regulations for implementation. While efforts are underway for the enforcement regs, as I said, today we're primarily going to focus on the inundation maps and the annual fees. I think last time I just briefly talked about annual fees. Today I'll go into more detail on the annual fees for you. As you may recall, we have about 1,250 jurisdictional dams, that's statewide. We have a highly variable inventory that ranges from the smallest dam being 6 feet high to our largest, which is Orville at 770 feet high. As you can see on this chart, on the right-hand side there's that bar chart, and it really shows that our dams are owned by a variety of people and entities, and they have varying levels of technical and financial resources. So ultimately, dam owners do have the legal and financial responsibility for the safe operation of their dams and to meet all regulatory requirements.
What are the color codes mean?
Yeah.
What's extremely high? The dam itself or?
Oh, the color codes, actually, I'll be defining those later, but it's the hazard, it's the potential downstream hazard classification. Hmm. So a low hazard means that property damage, if the dam were to fail, the damage would be primarily located on the owner's property, and there would be no loss of life and small economic loss. Significant means you're getting into higher property loss, no loss of life, but you could have environmental damage. High means you have at least one loss of life, and that's per the federal standard. And then what we did in California is because we do have probably about half of our inventory is high, we really felt we need to distinguish those that have high population downstream versus those that potentially only have one loss of life. So our extremely high represents where we have more than 1,000 people who would have potential loss of life. And I'm going to get into that a little bit more when we get into the inundation maps. But that's a good point. You brought that up. So, yeah, you can actually see then who owns. You'd be looking for the blue and the red on that graphic. And those are the highs and extremely highs. So as a result of SB 92, inundation maps and EAPs are now required for all dams except those considered low hazard. According to the schedule that's on the presentation, and it's also in our statutes. And so just to note, this is a very aggressive schedule that dam owners are required to meet. The first deadline was January of this year for dams that have extremely high hazard potential as classified by DSOD, and SB 92 was effective June 27th of 2017. So it really gave dam owners about 6 months to meet this first requirement, the ones affected, and it was just under 200 dams in that category. And as I said earlier, dam owners are financially responsible for the development of the maps and their EAPs. Through SB 92, there wasn't any funding that was allocated for this effort for the dam owners. DSOD did receive additional budget appropriation for our program for it. Inundation maps are independently reviewed and approved by DSOD. And once we approve them, they are allowed to include those in their EAPs that they submit to Cal OES, and Cal OES does the complete review of the EAP itself and approves them. This is just to give you an overview of our timeline of where we're at. We had emergency regulations that have been adopted and readopted. We are currently going to be publishing a formal 45-day notice in the next few days. We did have some work, informal workshops with dam owners and their consultants. It was a small focus group. Then we had a separate meeting with emergency managers, because we're not emergency managers, yet we're writing regulations to develop maps that emergency managers have to use. So we really wanted their input on what will be an effective map for them to use in an emergency. So we had those were the two focus groups, and we received some really good comments from them. And then we recently went out with an informal public comment on draft regs and received even more comments back from dam owners and consultants. And I'll be going through some of those comments later on. But we've received really positive feedback from the people commenting, even thanking us for listening to their input and adopting their recommendations. So this is an overview of the regulations themselves. It's just the different sections. So I thought what would be important to share with you today are the items highlighted in red, because really that's the bulk of the regulations is the modeling requirements, the technical memorandum that's submitted to DSOD, and the actual inundation map themselves, the requirements for the mapping. So with our regulations, we have we kind of grouped it into major objectives that we're focusing on. So the next three slides will give you an overview of the regulations. So first off, as part of the statute, it required various failure scenarios to be modeled. And so how that's incorporated into the regs is they have to model the failure of the main dam. They have to model the failure of what we consider critical or pertinent structures, and that's based on size and capacity. So it's anything that's 25 feet high, holds back more than 5,000 acre feet impoundment, or it could potentially have high downstream consequences. We're also looking at storm-induced or a sunny day failure scenario. And we're also having dam owners consider the effect of their dam failure on downstream dams. If their dam fails, is it going to cause, another effect downstream that will cause another dam to overtop and fail? Secondly, we feel like our assumptions need to be appropriate for dam for public safety. So we don't want regulations that are overly conservative, but they need to be conservative enough to where the public, it provides public safety. And so in doing that, we're requiring all dams to be modeled with full storage, regardless of how they're typically operated. The timing needs to be an instantaneous failure, or it results in the largest outflow from that structure. And for our structures, the gates need to be failed collectively as a system. So if you have six gates, you're failing the entire gated system. Next, we need the modeling, the inundation mapping modeling to be applicable for the site conditions. Our dams, as highly variable as they are, their site conditions are even more variable. No dam is in the exact location as another dam, and you have to treat each case on a case-by-case basis. So we want to make sure that the engineers doing the modeling are using the appropriate digital elevation data for the terrain that they're dealing with. We also want the appropriate hydraulic modeling to be used so that you have an accurate estimate of the magnitude and the extent of the flooding. And in order to ensure all this, we want maps to be signed and stamped by a California Registered Engineer. Next, we are asking for a technical memorandum to be submitted to DSOD to assist us in our review so that when we do our independent review, we understand what assumptions they used versus the assumptions we may be using to validate their model. And this also goes into the breach assumptions that they use. And the memorandum is fairly a short document. It's really just to aid in our review. And lastly, we want the inundation map information to be useful. That's the goal of this whole program, is to have useful maps. So we want to make sure that all maps have flood arrival time clearly depicted, the maximum depth of the inundation, and the peak velocity, and that's used for swift water rescue by EMAs. We want the limits of the extent to be clearly outlined. The map needs to have, obviously, a scale and the date it was produced, so we know it's a current map. And then just some general information about the dam system and any downstream critical facilities, and that would be like hospitals, fire stations, anything that you would normally see on a Google map, the EMAs recommended they wanted to see on the inundation maps, but nothing more than that, because you don't want to get into putting sensitive infrastructure on these maps. So if you don't see it on Google Maps, you shouldn't see it on an inundation map, was the advice we received. So these are the comments that we received overall. So what I did is I kind of broke it out into three groups. One is obviously funding and deadlines. As I said, there were no provisions for funding through the SB 92, and it is a very aggressive schedule. Next, we have hydraulic modeling requirements. So when we first went out with the emergency regulations, some of the consultants and dam owners voiced strongly that it was too prescriptive in the type of modeling that was required, and it did not allow for engineering judgment to be used. And also we have 200 dams that are duly regulated by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, referred to as FERC, and they also require EAPs and inundation maps. And so some dam owners felt that our regulations were in conflict with their requirements for FERC. And obviously, we don't want dam owners doing two different efforts just for the sake of doing it. And then lastly, the inundation mapping requirements. And so originally in our emergency regs, we required what's called a deflood to be shown on the map. And that's basically the time it takes for that flood wave to recess. So while you think that's good information to have, to know when the flood wave's going to be out of an area, the way it's done through the modeling, it actually can misinform the public. Because it is based on the fastest wave going through, that means you're going to have the shortest recession time because the flood's going to get out there quick. And really, that might not be the case because you got to consider all the other events that are going on, if there's other flooding going on. And if it's not a full failure like you see, it could be slower. And so the emergency managers had strongly voiced that should not be contained on a map itself. Now, it could be information contained within an EAP for the EMAs to use, but not on a public map. So based on all the input we received, and we have been doing a lot of communication with dam owners, they call our inundation map team quite a bit. They talk to our field engineers out in the field when they go out for inspections. We're definitely in communication with them. And based on their input and thinking through, again, what we're trying to achieve with this program, these were the kind of the major changes we've made. So the funding and deadlines is difficult because it is by statute, the deadlines. But what we are doing to help lessen it for some dam owners is we have less prescriptive modeling and mapping requirements, which may reduce the engineering costs and the map preparation cost for some of the dam owners. And we're on our own trying to look into, whenever we get information about any type of grants that are being offered, to see if any grants could be used by a dam owner for the preparation of inundation maps. The inundation maps is the cost. Cost an owner about $25,000 to do a map. And then if you get into, you also have a critical pertinent structure, then you're kind of doubling that cost. And for the extremely high hazard dams, their cost is probably could run up to $100,000 for a map if they have a lot of critical pertinent structures that need to be mapped. And so next was the hydraulic modeling requirements. And the way the draft regs are written now, it's going to be more of a performance-based regulation. So we've lessened the prescriptive requirements on the engineering and allowing a lot more engineering judgment. Because like I said, each dam really is a case-by-case basis. And each inundation map is case-by-case, depending on what the topography is downstream of it. We've also improved the alignment of the requirements with the FERC regulations. And we've also clarified a lot of the definitions in the regulations, especially what is considered a critical pertinent structure, because that did create confusion. On the inundation mapping requirements, as I mentioned, we eliminated the need for this deflood time to be shown on a map itself. And we have also specified when maps and EAPs are going to be required for new and enlarged dams. So we review and approve enlargements and new dam construction and really felt it was important that they have their inundation map completed before we authorize them to store water behind it and to have an EAP ready. So our next steps is we'll be going out with a formal notice in the formal 45-day public comment period in June. And then that public comment period will go through July. At the end of the July, we'll have a public meeting that we've already scheduled. And then we hope to come back to the commission in September for approval of the regulations and have them adopted in October for permanent status. Okay, next I'll be going on to the annual fees. So with our annual fees, what I wanted to explain first with this slide is we actually have two components that make up our revenue for our program. Our program is 100% funded through dam owners, and about 85 to 95% of the fees are paid through annual fees, and that's what our rulemaking process is that we're going through right now. And all dam owners pay an annual fee. The second component of our revenue is more variable, and it is actually what we call application filing fees, and this is a fee that a dam owner submits to us when they want to do work on their dam that requires our approval. And it's a percentage based on the construction cost of the project. So not every dam owner will pay this fee. It just depends if they have a project going on and what they're doing with their dam. So combined, this is our total revenue for the program. So prior to SB 92, we actually had a fee schedule that was in statute, and that became in statute in 2004 when we converted from the general fund over to our fee fund, our fee revenue based. And that schedule is actually outdated because we had cost of living increases on that fee increase over time. And so through SB 92, the fee schedule was removed out of statute, and it said that the department shall adopt by regulation our schedule of fees to carry out the program. And that fee schedule is to include the cost of the regular program plus the cost of reviewing inundation maps and amounts necessary to repay any budgetary loans plus a prudent reserve. So this is a similar timeline for our annual fees. We adopted emergency regulations at the end of March, and we had to do that because we have our billing that had to go out in April. And we bill in April, and dam owners pay their bills by July 1st, and those fees cover us for that upcoming fiscal year, the July 1 fiscal year. So we plan to go out with similar to how we did the process for the maps, which seemed to work really well for us, is to go out with an informal comment period on our regulations on the annual fees. We'll be doing that soon, and then we'll go into the formal 45-day comment period. So our annual fee process, we have a very short time to do it in each year. As the governor's budget comes out January 10, it's at that point we know our true budget for that year. And so we have really a four-month period to determine what our fees need to be for the next year. So because of the short time period, and we have highly variable swings in our revenue year to year because of that application fee component of it, we really thought our regulations, rather than being the actual fee schedule themselves, it needed to be the methodology that we go through each year to explain how we come up with the fees. Let me go back real quick. So the first part on the little chart on the right shows our fees, the revenue required, our application filing fees that are estimated for that year, and then we have a true-up component, and then the number in green is the number that we would be assessing out through the annual fees. So I'll be going through these components in the next slides. So the way we have our draft regulations currently is it's almost like a three-step process. So first we have to determine our annual fee that's required each year. And then next we have to determine how we develop that schedule of fees. So the schedule of fees we have right now in our emergency regulations mimics how we have assessed fees historically in the program. So there's a flat fee, we call it an administrative fee, and then there's a variable fee that's based on the height of the dam. So the larger dam you have, the larger fee you pay. And for the purpose of the regulations, we set the administrative fee to be 5% of our annual fee, our annual fee required. So the rate structure per the statute is we have a general rate, and that's basically the full rate. And that is paid by 96% of the dams, is the general rate. About 4% of the dams are qualify for what's called a reduced rate. And in the statute, that's been capped at a 20% of the general rate. And that's really to give a reduction in fees to the smaller dam owners, like the farmer and the ranch and the private owner who own a dam that's less than 100 acre feet. So it's for really for the real small dam owners. And then with that, we have what we call a limited rate. And basically, if you would normally fall under the general or the reduced rate, but your dam is currently inoperable, like you're not storing water in it at all, you have your low-level outlet open, and if we approve that, then you only pay the administrative rate of the fee, which is a fairly small fee. Also, under the limited rate in the statute, it does have a component in it. If your dam is actually used for a special school study, you fall under this. And currently, we don't have any dams that qualify under that. We did have one in the past. This is the rate structure by dam owner type. So the chart on your left, the multicolored one, is that chart I showed you at the beginning of the slide of the presentation, and it shows the hazard classification by owner type. And what I just wanted to do is to show a comparison of that chart to the one on the right, which is really who pays which fee. So you'll see that the majority of people pay the regular, what we call the general fee, and it's really only two categories of dam owners that fall within that reduced rate. So our annual fee schedule itself, as I mentioned, it's a flat fee and then a variable rate. And so what I'm showing on this slide is just to give you an indication of what the fee schedule looks like for this year. We did have a large increase this year due to SB 92 and a budget increase and a program expansion. We assessed out about a 35% increase this year to dam owners, and we're expecting about another 20% increase next year to get up to our full budgeted amount. This chart is divided into two. So the chart on the left is to give an indication for the dam owners who pay the general rate, which again is 96% of the dams. And all it does is show their there are different fees based on height. So if you were to look at, can't see the screen from here, but if you look at like a 100-foot high dam, you could see the cost that they paid last year versus this year. And on the left of the chart, there's the inventory. So that's how many dams fall within that height. Most of our dams are the 50 to 100-foot height category. I think the average for our general is really about 70 feet high is our average height. And then on the right-hand side is the same chart, but for the reduced rate. So you'll see for the reduced rate, the dam height is much smaller. They're normally, I think, like about 30 feet high is our average height for them. So I think we only have maybe very, very one or two dams that are 100 feet high that are under the on the reduced rate. So this is to show what our annual fees support for the program. So it supports our maintenance inspections, which have, again, been bolstered through the governor's bolstering of dam safety in SB 92. Our reevaluation studies, which, again, has been bolstered through the program expansion of the program to have a focused reevaluation section. And currently, our spillway reevaluation program that initiated the review of 93 spillways back last year is part of that program. Emergency response, anytime a dam owner is having any type of incident or an emergency at their dam, we respond to those emergencies. And if there's ever a large earthquake event in the state, we would be responding to all those dams as well. And then lastly, the inundation map program is a completely new component for the program, as you know. This is a location of where the dams are located that pay the different rates. You'll see that the general rate is in the highly populated areas. The reduced rate is much more in the rural areas. And again, it shows the hazard classification owned by the different types of ratepayers. So the comments we received so far on our annual fees. One thing I'll preface is as our engineers had been going out all year long on doing their inspections, they talked to the dam owners quite a bit. The dam owners had a lot of questions on inundation maps, and a lot of them had questions of how this would be impacting their fees. So we did have a lot of face-to-face communication out in the field. We ended up receiving about 25 responses after we sent out our invoices, which is really a very small percentage, and I think it's because we've had so much interaction with the dam owners. A lot of them knew a large rate increase was coming, and you know they understood why. But obviously the common comment was the short notice of the fee increase, because a lot of agencies do their budget 2 years in advance, and they didn't have adequate time to plan for this increase. We did get one call. Someone was unclear on what the billing period was. Did it cover a calendar year or a fiscal year? Another big comment is the ability with the concern to pay. They asked if there is any alternative type of structure for disadvantaged communities. And again, right now, the way the statute's written, the fee is directly related to the dam owner themselves, not who they support in their community. Also, a lot of them emphasize that they have limited funding resources. So these are the ones that are going to be like your homeowners associations, your swim clubs that have 50 families that pay it to support the recreation for their local community. Another one is the fee structure. To consider other parameters than height in the equation, for instance, hazard potential or storage volume. And to some asked if their dam could be evaluated to see if it would fall under the reduced rate rather than the general rate. And then there was just some, you know, some people were not as knowledgeable as of the bolstering of dam safety that's occurred. So they asked, you know, why are my fees being increased, and what do these fees support for the program and for them? So So our next steps on this is we will need to do another readoption of the emergency regs, and we'll do that in September. We'll have our public comment period through July and August with a public meeting in August. And the goal is to submit to the commission for approval in October the regulations and then have them effective November. And thank you.
Great. Thanks. Are there any questions? I'll ask the commission first and then open it up for public questions. I had a couple questions. One of, I mean, it seemed to me that when people talked about the short notice of fees, most water operations usually have a reserve in place, and I would think that a financial reserve would be the kind of thing that they could go to. So sort of added to that comment, is there anything like best practices for dam owners, you know, that talks about the combination of, you know, not just physical management of the structure, but the financial management?
We don't have any within our program. That is a good comment. I'm not sure if FERC has any or not, but historically when dam owners have come into our office for rehabilitation projects that are very costly, it is a challenge for them. A lot of them are dealing with a Prop 218 where they got to get approval or they have to go through a board to get approval. And having some type of guideline out there, I think, would be very valuable for those reserves. I think it gets harder when you get into the private dam owner.
Oh, sure.
Because they can't qualify for grants. That's normally through the public sector. And I think they just don't realize, the structure they own and that true financial responsibility behind it and liability behind it.
Yeah. Okay. If there aren't any other questions or comments, thank you. If there aren't any other questions or comments from the commission, are there any public comments or questions from folks in the audience? Again, this is a workshop. It's not a formal meeting. So it's... Thank you very much. That was a great presentation. That was really clear. Thanks. Okay. Executive Officer Yun, do we want to look at the approval of state water project review?
Right. And since it's a workshop, there would be no approval here. I think it would be worth probably hearing what we have to talk about in terms of the report, and then if you have any commissioners have any personal input they want to put in, we could do that. I think what will happen with this report then is we will have time to go back and do the final format and then bring this back in June so the commissioners can see it in its final format before it goes to the legislature and we can get your approval probably next month.
And the draft was posted earlier this week or last week?
That's correct.
Yeah, because I read through it, and it seemed really good to me, and I'll just make sure I encourage my fellow commissioners to take a read through of that report. It's pretty clear. Thank you. So good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning, Chairman Quintero and commissioners. I think you recall that in March we had a discussion with DWR on the discussion draft of the State Water Project Annual Review. And at that time, there were a number of comments and directions to staff regarding the findings and recommendations that you would like to see in the 2017 annual review. So since March, we have put together the draft in the current form, reflecting your direction and discussion at the March meeting. What I'd like to do today is just run through the contents of this final draft. And as Joe said, the next step would be for us to format it, bring it back to you at your next meeting for final consideration and approval. So as you see on the slide, there are basically two main sections of the review. There's the executive summary with the findings and recommendations, and then there's a second section that has a detailed review of the operations and construction projects from 2017. That's largely an update of the information that was in the 2016 report on the construction projects, plus a recap of the various briefings that DWR presented to the Commission last year on topics such as subsidence and the several briefings that you had on Oroville and a briefing on climate change. So what I'm going to do is just run through the findings and recommendations on these slides. The findings are on the left in the white section, and the recommendations are on the right in the blue section. We've talked about the Oroville spillway incident quite a bit, so I don't need to remind you of all that happened and all that DWR did to respond. The key things here are that you acknowledge that the department responded effectively to the many threats and managed the incident appropriately, that they completed the reconstruction of the spillway by November 1st per their plan in order to accommodate 100,000 CFS flows for the winter year, which fortunately didn't have as heavy a rainfall as the previous year. And also to note that in its planning for the spillway reconstruction, DWR did incorporate the independent forensic team's reports, findings, and recommendations. And the recommendation that you are making on this subject is pretty much that all the emergency planning that has come out of the Oroville incident, all the increased emphasis on emergency planning, would be a fit and appropriate topic for the DWR or other emergency planning organizations to bring to you in the future for updates as to how they're progressing and how things have changed since the Oroville incident. Dam safety. Well, this is a really great topic since we just had that fabulous briefing from Sharon covering all of the dam safety regulations and changes in the program that have occurred since the Oroville incident, largely based on SB 92. So, obviously, Oroville led to quite a few changes in how the state approaches dam safety. SB 92 bolstered the program, as Sharon explained to you. And some of the things that that you might want to consider is that the SB 92 called for classifying dams based on risk, which was not the case before, requiring dam owners to prepare the emergency action plans and inundation maps, as you heard Sharon explaining, and enhancing DWR's enforcement authority. On infrastructure, one of the consequences of the Oroville incident was that DWR put an increased emphasis in its asset management program on adapting and refurbishing the State Water Project to reflect changing hydrologic conditions and future changes in management. So they brought you quite a bit of information at the March briefing on the asset management program and how that is evolving, and we recommend your recommendation on this subject is that the DWR should come back and brief you regularly on how that program is being implemented and how it is affecting the risk management and the operation of the State Water Project. In the second part of the annual review, you'll see there's a pretty extensive section on the construction projects that are underway, and some of those are in response to increasing, changing hydrologic conditions and seismic concerns, such as the subsidence issues and the modernizing pumping plants and fire suppression and so forth at Thermalito. So those are all part of the asset management program. Those are things that are underway and that are part of adapting the State Water Project to current hydrologic conditions. Climate change, you'll see that there are a number of recommendations here that the DWR should incorporate climate change planning into its asset management program, and that DWR should include activities that would improve ecosystem functions of the Feather River watershed in the asset management program. One of the reasons for that is that you know, in 2016, the governor signed AB 2480, declaring that it is state policy that source watersheds are recognized and defined as integral components of California's water infrastructure. And so that bill noted the importance of source watersheds to maintaining the reliability, quality, timing, and quantity of California's water supply as climate change advances. And the bill made certain ecosystem restoration and conservation activities eligible for the same forms of financing as other water collection and treatment infrastructure. Therefore, there's a solid basis for the commission to recommend that DWR include activities that improve ecosystem functions, such as real-time data collection and coordinated land management in the Feather River watershed as part of its asset management program. In addition, a recommendation that DWR should regularly brief you on its progress in adapting the operation of the water project to changing hydrologic conditions, and on the status of California water suppliers participating in the climate registry. DWR's participation in the climate registry and its commitment to collecting the data and accounting for its GHG emissions and its changing operations and increased renewable portfolio have really enabled the department to achieve its 2020 goals for GHG reduction 5 years early and to make significant progress towards achieving its 2050 goals. So if that information, if the Climate Registry and DWR could bring you some information about how those programs affect water suppliers and which water suppliers could also participate, that would probably be a very good subject for your consideration and as a public forum for statewide water management issues. You had a briefing last year on the aqueduct subsidence in which you saw that there was pretty significant subsidence in the southern portion of the aquifer between San Luis and Bakersfield. So I just brought that slide back to remind you of those locations where they had significant subsidence of 5 to 7 inches a year. And DWR is continuing to work on evaluating long-term solutions and taking some short-term actions to make sure that the flow of water isn't impeded by this subsidence. One of your recommendations is that DWR should come back this year with some information about what they're doing to address the longer-term ramifications of continued subsidence. It would also be an opportunity to bring in the SGMA planning efforts and how that might help reduce subsidence or how SGMA might affect further subsidence. All right, so that's it for the findings and recommendations, and this is the slide that is just the table of contents for the second section, and I apologize, it's a little bit hard to read, but it basically shows you that you have quite a bit of background information about the topics that are the basis for your findings and recommendations. So we've got a pretty detailed chronology of the Lake Oroville spillway incident, quite a bit of information about dam safety and the changes that were brought about by SB 92, climate change, aqueduct subsidence, and then we'll have the tables for total water delivery and power generation like we had in last year's report. And we will also, and there's also some updates on the construction projects, as well as updates on the implementation of the biological opinions and basically the regulatory status of the water fix. So again, the next steps would be for you to consider and approve this draft at your next meeting. We'll be able to format it and put some pictures in so it's a little more easy to read, and then transmit to the legislature and the director. We'll also get working on scheduling some of these briefings and informational sessions from DWR for the fall after the WISP is done.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any comments or questions from commissioners? I'll make a couple comments.
Sure.
One of them, and I did read the report, but I don't remember if in talking about the subsidence and the aqueduct if there was any reference to what's happening with the CVP, because of subsidence, I don't know if, how many people are aware of this. The CVP is only able to deliver 60% of the water it can normally deliver because the canals have dropped. So basically, they've dropped to the point that if you put in 100% of the flow, it would spill out over the edges of the canal. And I think it's a really, could be a really important point to include in there as that, as something that's real, that, that could happen. And I think that's the number. You may want to verify it, but it might be worth looking at that. And the other thing that I'm really, I was really glad to see the mention of SB 2480 and really what's been referred to as the acknowledgement of watersheds as green infrastructure. And what it makes me, and I know we're not making recommendations right now, and I'll do this at a future meeting, but I think that next year it could be really interesting to have presentations of how watersheds are being managed for, you know, because there's a lot of strategies going in. There's a lot of effort right now in figuring out how to do that, including really interesting financing mechanisms, as well as different measuring and monitoring mechanisms and forest management. And also, I just gave a talk recently, and one of the things in my prep for the talk is I looked at the Organic Act of the U.S. Forest Service, and the number one thing that was mentioned in the originating legislation creating the Forest Service was that their job was to take care of watersheds, which I thought is really interesting. And so I think that in going forward, it might be really important to connect not only what we're doing now, but give it some historical context, because I think the public, as much as possible, needs to understand the value of watersheds to our future water management in the state. Thank you, Jennifer. That was great. Are there any public comments on this presentation? Perfect. Thank you so much. So that actually, I believe, brings our workshop to a conclusion. Thanks, everybody, for being here this morning.